Belt making was considered to be a laborious career in the past. It is an industry that has never lost its customers, and it is being developed at the moment. Today, felt is produced in most parts of Iran, and the main centers of this industry are Istakhban in southern Fars province, different cities of Gilan and Mazandaran provinces, Semnan, Damghan, Quchan, Chaharmahal and Bakhtiari, Kermanshah, and others. So let's see what our listener from Germany, Dieter Sommer, says. Hello to the team of IRIB English Radio. Few days ago, I had the opportunity to listen with big pleasure to your English broadcast on shortwave with a good signal here in Germany. Your programs are very interesting and informative. I will send you a reception report, and please send me a QSL card and another information. I wish you all the best and many greetings to all our listeners from around the world. Salam and warm greetings to you, Dieter Sommer from Germany. Many thanks for writing to us. We're glad to hear that you were able to receive the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region, and it seems that you like the programs as you describe them as very interesting and informative. Thank God. An electronic QSL will be sent to you as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And here we come to the end of our today's program. Many thanks for being with us. But before saying goodbye, I just wanted to thank those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails from around the world, including Najmuddin from Bangladesh, Peter NG from Malaysia, Rafwan Ahmad from India, Dan Olson from Sweden, and Dieter Sommer from Germany. Many thanks for being with us. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran. for big and small.
اعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Our greetings and salams and respect and salutations, first of all, to the Imam of our time, Imam Mahdi, Ajjal Allah Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif, and to you, dear brothers and sisters, who are listening to another episode of the program, Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we try to delve a little bit deeper into challenges and problems that you, dear parents, Muslim parents, might have with regards to raising your lovely, dear teenagers. And alhamdulillah, in the studio, we have our dear guest, an expert of the program, Sayyid Salman Naghawi, who is a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University. His specialty is Islamic studies. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much.
All right. We talked a lot about parenting styles. We mentioned transformational and transactional parentings. And I think we covered whatever that was basically there. Now, in this program, we want to talk about some problems and challenges and, like, you know, really dark issues in the personality or character of our teenage child, where they're not polite to us, they talk back to us, they have some negative features. Of course, this is a very broad question, and specifically want to talk about the fact that our teenager has a rude personality, and you really, you know, he or she doesn't respect you the way he or she should, and that makes you a little bit worried. Now, are you supposed to neglect this, or talk to the teenager, or, you know, punish him? What are you supposed to do?
Yes, thank you very much. That's something which we are all faced with normally in our lives when we are raising children, especially teenagers, and it's not an easy thing. It's not an easy task, as we have been always saying that we need to learn how to become a parent. It's not, we don't learn it by birth or by just being, you know, just getting married and that's all. No, we need to educate ourselves to be able to become good parents and to be able to manage situations which are difficult. And the most important thing is that we need to be careful of the fact that we are doing all of this for a purpose. It's all for the sake of Allah Almighty. It's all for the sake of gaining the proximity to Allah Almighty. And gaining proximity to Allah Almighty basically is becoming godly in our practices, in our behavior, in our conduct, in our attributes and traits. That's important because otherwise, we always talk about good deeds, and then we come up with this question, oh, if a non-believing person or a non-Muslim is carrying out good deeds, then what's the difference between us and them? And we say basically the difference is the intention. The intention is that we do it for Allah Almighty, and doing it for Allah Almighty means doing it for the sake of becoming close to Him and godly like Him in His attributes. And one of his attributes is he knows what he has created, and so he knows about the teenager. We also should know about and discover the psychology of a teenager and understand why he is rude. We have to be compassionate about it. We have to be caring. We need to understand what is the reason that a teenager is rude. Number one, basically, it's because of the ongoing changes in his mind and his feelings and his thoughts. As a teenager, there is a tremendous difference coming up in his behavior because of the change in the hormones inside him. So it's something natural. And because he or she cannot understand what's happening, it's a new experience, especially in the beginning, when a person has become an adolescent and he is facing this challenge.
Let's go for a short break and we'll be right back.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, you brothers and sisters. We're talking about rudeness of teenagers and how we as parents can tackle this problem. Sayed in our program mentioned some very fundamental points about the physiology of the era, the time of adolescence, and we want to learn more about
it. Yes. Number two, if someone is rude in any situation, we shouldn't be condoning that rudeness. Having said that, we have to realize that there's a change going on, but that does not mean that we're going to accept the rude behavior, because if we don't nip it in the bud, the behavior shall become a habit. So it has to be taken care of. But there are two ways of doing it. The moment a person is rude, you can start becoming rude yourself and tit for tat. But that's not the way, is it? You need to be above that. You don't need to find yourself in a situation where you're competing with your youngster, or you feel that he's your competitor, or he's your enemy, or whatever. Neither he should feel that way, nor yourself. So you need to take some time off. You should try to comfort the person and try to make him or make her realize that you're not feeling well, you're not up to it, so let's take time off. I'm going to be sitting here waiting for you to come back to your maybe normal condition, and then we'll talk over it. So you need to, you know, buy some time for yourself and for the child to calm down, to cool down, as it is. And you need to refrain from giving a knee-jerk reaction to what behavior she or he is presenting. So basically you need to keep your cool. You have to remain without any, I mean, you don't need to express at least negative behavior. Yes, you can show that, you can present yourself that you don't like what's happening, you feel offended, but not because you're offended because of yourself, because you feel that it's not the right thing for the child to do, for the teenager to do. It's something bad for him or her to do that.
Right.
So that's just to make him or her realize that it's not what's happening is not good.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to react or overreact. Take time off. And then when the situation is better, then you can understand, you can make him or her realize that they need to, you know,
talk about it.
Yes, we need to talk about it, and you need to tell them that this rude behavior is not what acceptable. It's not acceptable.
Right. Let's go for a short break, and we'll be right back.
يا مطي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات.
The Prophet صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مطي الخيرات يا مطي الخيرات.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters in faith. We are talking about rudeness of teenagers and how to tackle this problem. Sayed in our program mentioned two points. First, taking into account the psychological, physiological changes happening in the teenager. And second of all, the way the parent should be dealing with the teenager is not a tit-for-tat, tactic that, okay, since you're rude, I'm going to do this, I'm going to act the same way. And buy some time so that eventually he or she will cool down and you will talk about the problem. But my problem is that oftentimes, you know, sometimes you have teenagers, some teenagers who do like to talk about their problems and concerns, and like if they've had a bully at school or if they've had a problem, and they do come to you eventually when you have a problem, but sometimes this doesn't happen, and that relationship between the parent and the teenager is non-existent. And so even when time goes by, still, I mean, they do cool down, but they don't approach you to talk to you, to share their feelings with you.
Yes, of course. So basically it results from the fact that you have shunned him or her, you have snubbed him. Yes, we do say we need to nip the problem in the bud, but the problem is that the nipping should be so with care and such a way that does not cut off your lines of communication with him or her. In any case, you need to maintain your communication with your child, and that is a great. Maybe it's not a good easy task. It's not a very easy. You need to control yourself. And for everything where we face a difficult situation, we also always will be trying to, should be trying to seek the help of Allah Almighty to give us the strength to control ourselves. Not only with our teenagers, in any situations, maybe sometimes with our parents, sometimes with our siblings, sometimes with, in all situations, anger is not the proper behavior. You shouldn't become angry in any case. You shouldn't allow others to control your behavior. Whenever you show negative behavior, you become angry, and it's sparked by the behavior of someone else, then you are putting yourself at their mercy, and you are allowing them to manipulate you and influence you. So you need to understand that in any situation where there's someone coming at you with rudeness and anger and a negative sort of behavior, you need to maintain your cool, and it's quite difficult. It's not always easy. And you need to seek Allah's help to remember that you are trying to educate someone. You're trying to do something for his or her benefit.
Right.
And as a result, you need to understand that, the most important thing is that all our actions and our behaviors, we remember, maintain that connection with Allah Almighty. That is true zikr of Allah Almighty. Zikr of Allah is not just sitting and, counting your beads and saying Allahu Akbar, Alhamdulillah. Right. Remembering Allah is not just by lip service. It's by really seeking His help when you're in need or when you're even not in need. So the important thing is that linkage between you, yourself, and Allah is maintained. And as the hadith says, that anyone who maintains and establishes that good connection with Allah Almighty will make all his connections easy.
Between him and other people.
And between others.
Right.
So this is the basic thing, especially with our own kids.
Right. Thank you so much. You mentioned several very fruitful and useful and practical points. Basically, all of them about how the parent has to raise his awareness with regards to the child, and also it's a process of self-development and, growing his capacity, like becoming more patient. This is all the time that we have. Thank you very much for listening to this program. I'm sure a lot of you have a lot of questions to ask, or you have concerns or comments with regards to our program. Feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. You can also visit our social media, Instagram and Facebook, at Call of Islam Radio. And you can listen to our programs at parstoday.ir. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Allah, Allah, Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Mystical taste in understanding the secrets of the teachings of Quran and supplications of the Imams, peace be upon them. Often the mystical issues that are in the Quran and the supplications of the Immaculate Imams, may Allah's peace be upon them, and these supplications of the month of Sha'ban are mystical subjects which the individuals, philosophers, mystics can to some extent comprehend to understand the theme, but they cannot be justice because the mystical taste has not been obtained.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. On the subject of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh said, "The uprising of you, Iranian youth, the uprising of you, Iranian nation, which was a divine uprising and a divine movement, revived the Quran and Islam." You know, this statement of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh concerns about the divine aspects of Iranian revolution. Well, morally speaking, the revolution of Iran provided the opportunity for people to learn more and more about religion and Quran. While in the time of the monarchy of Shah, the mosques, the religious gatherings, and the incarnations of Islamic nation were sternly censored, after the revolution, people had the chance to attend religious gatherings and change their lives according to the rules of Islam. In the history of our country, two great unprecedented tasks were carried out by Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. One was the destruction of a structure which was based on a cruel and unreasonable hereditary monarchy. This hereditary monarchy had a millennium-long history in our country. This old and derelict structure, on the basis of which some people took over the government with the power of their swords and armies and then passed it to the other people in a hereditary way, was a wrong and unreasonable tradition that dominated our country for several thousand years. The first task that Imam Rahmatullah Alayh carried out was to destroy this strong structure and to entrust affairs to the people.
يا ربنا صل على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صل
يا رسول الله
The second great task that Imam Rahmatullah Alayh carried out was to create a government on the basis of Islam. This was unprecedented in the history of our country and the history of Islam as well after the early Islamic era. The great jihad that our holy Imam Rahmatullah Alayh did brought about such a valuable product. Therefore, it is really necessary to say that he strove in his cause, such a striving that is due to him, which also exists in the Holy Book of Quran. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wajahidu fillah haqqa jihadihi. And strive his cause, such a striving that is due to him. Surah Al-Hajj, verse number 78. Like the other saints, this great man was a manifestation of his strove in his cause, such a striving that is due to him. Thank you very much. Until another episode, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day,
every night and every day. Never forget to say La ilaha
And we're back with yet another episode of Gaza Under Attack. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. I'm Saeed Pourreza in London. Let's get started with a quick review of the latest developments. The U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza rages on. Occupation forces' incursion into Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis has led to the deaths of at least four patients after electricity was severed and oxygen supplies cut. Apartheid Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejects the recognition of a Palestinian state ahead of a planned incursion into the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where more than 1.5 million people are sheltering. Tel Aviv's staunchest ally, the United States, says a ground attack on Rafah would be a disaster without a plausible evacuation plan, a warning echoed by the U.S. High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi. If it went ahead, the ground invasion could displace hundreds of thousands of Palestinians across the Rafah frontier into Egypt. Video has emerged of the Egyptians building a buffer zone, a refugee camp, despite their opposition to the displacement of Palestinians. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says the regional resistance axis is resolved to liberate Palestine from Israeli occupation and aggression, no matter the cost. The U.S.-led Israeli ethnic cleansing campaign in the Gaza Strip has so far killed nearly 29,000 Palestinians and wounded some 69,000 others, 70% of the casualties, women and children. That's 250 a day, according to Oxfam. Joining me to unpack all this and more is in the studio, Fatima Merchant. Fatima is a protest coordinator and social media manager. She has been an avid campaigner for human rights and is the co-host of the Liberated Voices podcast. And joining us via Skype is Mick Napier, a dedicated anti-racism campaigner and member of the Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you both for joining me. I will start with you, Fatima, and I'm going to get your thoughts on Rafah in the south of Gaza ahead of this looming, seemingly imminent Israeli incursion.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure as always.
Pleasure is ours.
So what we are seeing, of course, is an increasing audacity from Israel and from Netanyahu. We knew that this was coming. You only have to look back, not even 75 years, to know that this has been coming. When these Palestinians were pushed into southern Gaza, it was never that they were going to be safe. So we have expected this, we knew it was coming, and it now depends on what level of humanity the rest of the world has. And we are the ones truly being put to test to see how much we actually care.
And Mick, there are heartbreaking scenes emerging, images showing blast craters near camps, the Nasser Hospital in catastrophic conditions after the occupation forces, troops raided the facilities. How much more can we watch on from the sidelines?
I mean, it's so barbaric. And every day, almost every week, brings more barbarism. I think it's difficult to overestimate how shocking, how this is burning deep into the international psyche when people see what's happening as they've never seen before. You know, every patient in the intensive care unit dead, all the neonates, all the newly born babies in another intensive care unit, all dead, all killed, Palestinian children's corpses lying around and eaten by dogs while Israeli snipers prevent anyone giving them a decent burial. It's beyond human language almost to describe and to respond to this verbally. So what can you say?
It's beyond human language to describe it, if that's okay. But talking about the leaders, you know, around the world, especially in the Western world, it's an example of psychopathy that we don't see these leaders stepping forward and calling for a permanent cessation of the unfolding genocide.
Not only are they not stepping forward, we have to remind ourselves that Netanyahu phoned Biden and phoned Rishi Sunak as well before the genocidal attacks began. So he knows he needs a green light. He received a green light, and then the genocide began. Now, any student of history will know that America is perfectly capable of genocide. In fact, it's born out of genocide. But it's also perfectly capable in the modern era of killing 3 million Indochinese in a war of aggression. The French are capable of killing 1.5 million Algerians to maintain their control over another part of the Arab world. So this is incredibly horrific. 250 people, you know, killed or murdered by bombs or executed face to face. It's getting pretty close to the death rate in Auschwitz. So our governments are very comfortable financing and protecting this genocide. What they're not comfortable doing is having an election and knowing that they have no mandate in popular opinion in their countries for these atrocities. So in a sense, there's always been, every time there's an Israeli massacre, they call it mowing the lawn. That is 2014, 2009, they go in and they kill 1,000 or more Palestinians. And there's always a race between how quickly popular revulsion builds up to danger point for these governments and how long they give the Israelis to do the killing. It seems now Biden is saying, or Blinken is saying, slow down the killing, kill a few people less, or perhaps give us something to offer public opinion in America, because it's against this genocide very strongly.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Auschwitz. A lot of people, of course, are already calling what's happening in the Gaza Strip as the Gaza Holocaust, befittingly. I want to switch gears here a little, if possible. And clearly, Mick, there is a price to be paid for speaking up for Palestine at the moment. I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but could you perhaps bring us up to speed with your current issue with the Scottish courts, where you had initially been brought up on terrorism charges?
I don't want to talk about it too much, but look, every time there's a massacre, 2009, 2014, 2021, today, then charges are pressed, you know, ridiculous charges of racism, which are always kicked out in the courts. And currently, it was very recently, charges of terrorism. Because at a big rally in Glasgow, I said, I thanked Hamas, I thanked the Palestinian resistance for proving, by winning elections and then the Palestinians being punished, for proving that British commitment to democracy is a complete sham. It's just not there. And I also thanked the Palestinians in Gaza, the resistance, sorry, Hamas specifically, for breaking out of the concentration camp on October the 7th, because any other people anywhere in the world would try to do the same if they were subjected to what the Palestinians have been subjected to for the last almost 2 decades, and the last 75 years, actually. So that led to being arrested, snatched by police a very short time in the cells, and then they attempted to pin the charge of terrorism on me. But they didn't go ahead with it, because had we gone to court, we would have had a fantastic opportunity to explain precisely why every decent person in the world, without exception, would support the Palestinian right to resist the Palestinian resistance. So they backed off, but they'll be back again. But it's low-level harassment compared to what people have to suffer. 124 dead Palestinian journalists for standing up for their rights. Really, it's low-grade harassment. Some people who are vulnerable, will be deterred by this. But people like David Miller and many other people who stand up and fight, we always win.
Absolutely. More of the amazing discussion in just a few minutes, but let's hear from the Palestinian foreign minister, Riyad al-Maliki, who has met with his Greek counterpart about aid for the Gaza Strip and how to help the Palestinians in the besieged enclave. Al-Maliki shared his thoughts during a news briefing in Athens alongside Greek Foreign Minister George Garipetridis. Let's have a listen.
For us, this is very important, and therefore we talked about how to stop the invasion into Rafah. We talked about how to bring humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip, which is certainly scarce due to the barriers and conditions that Israel places on the entry of such aid, and this aid must enter in large quantities and must enter to all areas including the northern Gaza Strip. We talked about preventing displacement, regardless of its names, this displacement that aims to expel the Palestinian people from the Gaza Strip abroad, the terrorism and violence of the settlers, which increases its ferocity, in the West Bank is a result of the encouragement they receive from the Israeli government, specifically from some ministers in the Israeli government who are terrorists in every sense of the word, taking lands, building illegal settlements, attacking villages, burning houses and vehicles, cutting down trees and shooting massively at all innocent civilians.
The Palestinian foreign minister there. Fatima, we heard what the foreign minister had to say. He's been doing the diplomatic rounds. We saw him with the Arab bloc at the UN earlier in the week, and now in Athens. Is it having any impact at all?
Well, so there is an impact. The extent of that impact, we're yet to see. I would say that something that Mick mentioned earlier is key to focus on here. There are elements that coincide with the Holocaust, and when we look at that, we need to see that there is a voice that is coming from Palestine, and there is sort of a representative that can speak on what's happening from that perspective. In terms of what's happened on October 7th compared to what has been happening since, and even prior to October 7th, there needs to be a voice, and there needs to be people calling out what terrorism looks like, mm-hmm. be it from the Holocaust then, or even this Holocaust now, potentially. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we do have this minister going around and having these diplomatic discussions. Whether or not it's going to impact foreign policy, I'm not sure. It's not information that people didn't already know. It's just simply, even just having that person there as a representative holds power in itself.
Mm-hmm. Let me go to Mick now. The matter of the Israeli onslaught, Mick, is clearly an international issue. This is becoming less and less limited to only the Gaza Strip. But is it the case that until the chief accomplice, Washington, acts, the rest are just screaming into the void here?
I don't believe it. I think if America decided to stop the genocide, they could do so very quickly indeed. But it doesn't mean that the EU lacks in power. The EU is Israel's biggest trading partner. They give Israel sweetheart deals. They give them privileged access to markets. They have very intimate scientific and technical cooperation. And all of this could be used as leverage against Israel if the EU decided to do so. So it's purely a matter of will. Look, Israel is about 6 million Zionist Jews and another million non-Zionist Jews, surrounded by a few hundred million Arabs and other people in the Middle East who know what Israel is doing, that it's a Jewish supremacist state. The only thing that Israel can possibly stop Israel is force. Now, that force can be military. It can be economic internationally. It can be popular revulsion and political action. But ultimately, unless Israel is stopped by these varieties of resistance, after they deal with the Palestinians successfully through ethnic cleansing, God forbid, then other people in the Middle East will be in their crosshairs. Having created a monster, Britain and then the USA, aided by the EU, begins to fear this monster. We see ministers in Belgium and in Spain beginning to call for action against Israel. But, it's such a monstrous regime that sometimes if you have a big attack dog, it might bite you. And I think that's a possibility at the moment. But resistance is the only way to save the people of the Middle East from a cataclysm. This is a monstrous regime. If you can kill 500 people in a hospital in one night and you have 100 atom bombs and hydrogen bombs, this is a danger to the whole world, for sure.
For sure. You speak of resistance. I was watching The Wanted 18 last night. It's a form of resistance that came in the form of buying cows from the Israelis, and how that went for those of our viewers who are interested. They may want to watch that. It is ongoing, of course. It has been going on for decades. But what I would like to ask you is that this is a historic moment, of course, Fatima, that will have future generations asking why we didn't do more. How do you think people who will come after us, the future generations, judge or look upon today's leaders who could have done more, or could have stopped it today, but did not?
Well, we tend to see history repeating itself over and over. The difference is that now, with the avenues of information that we have, the younger generation are seeing live what is happening. So whilst our generation might have learnt about genocides and history lessons or whatnot, and it's from a biased perspective still, you need to understand that. When it's being taught to you, mm-hmm. especially in the UK, you're being taught by the colonisers what they did. That is true to an extent for the younger generation now, but they're seeing it more from a social media perspective, which is unbiased, still biased, but less. So they know the truth. They're growing up seeing those people killed in Rafah, in Gaza. They're seeing all of the atrocities live. I mean, it's not the same as previous wars or conflicts where you didn't see the little girls hanging without legs. Yeah. You didn't see all of these atrocities. Our younger people are seeing them. They're seeing the bloodshed. They're seeing the mothers holding their babies wrapped in cloth, and it's terrifying to them. Yeah. So not only are they being traumatized now, this is a trauma they will carry on. Mm-hmm. So when they become adults and when they do become of voting age, they will hold our political leaders to account. Mm-hmm.
And of course, they see, as you said, the lies, the double standards as well. While we're in the UK, as long as the UK government doesn't listen to the voice of its people and demand a ceasefire in Palestine, demonstrations will continue. That, according to the campaigners from the Newcastle Stop the War Coalition, speaking at a recent protest in London against the unfolding genocide in Gaza. Have a listen.
We're here to stop the genocide and try to spread the message about Palestine. Obviously, we're with a group, all of us, and stop the campaign. All of us are here from Newcastle, stop the campaign, and PSA and FOA are here. They're somewhere around the crowds. We are here for one message, ceasefire. We want a ceasefire in the UK. We want innocent people stop getting killed.
Okay, we're demonstrating for an immediate ceasefire. We're putting pressure on Rishi Sunak and on the British government and demanding that all of our politicians hold Israel to account. And we are holding our politicians to account, demanding that they represent us, that we want peace and justice in Palestine. We keep demonstrating in the hope that it will make an impact on the political decisions that our government makes, but they need to know that they will pay a price, and politicians will pay a price if they don't represent our voices and they don't do what we are saying, which is a very simple demand. It's the bare minimum, which is that there is a ceasefire in Palestine. A huge number of people are very disillusioned with politicians, and people will make their own decisions about how they vote, but the message is, if you don't call for a ceasefire, then you don't deserve our vote.
Meantime, the World Health Organization says a field hospital in Gaza, set up to receive some 200 patients a day, is receiving up to 700, nearly half of them severe trauma cases. The WHO's Dr. Richard Pieperkorn made the comment while visiting a field hospital set up by the NGO International Medical Corps in Rafah. He expressed concern over an expected ramping up of fighting in the southern Gaza city, which could quickly overwhelm an already severely depleted medical system.
We have seen this, of course, with other hospitals. When military activities come close to a hospital, staff cannot attend the hospital, patients cannot access the hospital, WHO cannot bring in their supplies, and the hospital very quickly becomes from partially, they become partially functional, barely functional, and non-functional. This is one of the hospitals we need, and we need to keep it for a long time.
Let's continue the discussion with my guests, Fatima Merchant and Mick Napier, as we enter the final stretch of the show, and I go to Mick first. Worrying signs, Mick, over there, that even the field hospitals are in danger of being overwhelmed, and we're still not at the worst of things. Can you, based on your experience, of course, of observing these conflicts, draw a picture of how worse things can't really get?
They cannot get much worse. This has been building for a very long time. The Israelis have a hideous expertise in ethnic cleansing. They're born out of ethnic cleansing as a state, and it's never stopped. This comes back to the level of 1948, however, when gangs go into villages, towns, line up the young men and old men and young and boys, and execute them in front of their family in order to instill fear. Numerous examples of this. The Israelis have the world's greatest expertise in this kind of ethnic cleansing. How can it get worse? Just more of the same. I mean, will the Egyptians allow a million people to be pushed over the border into Sinai? Will they fight? Nothing suggests that they will. And if you go to bed with Israel, as the Egyptians have done since the 70s, your options become very limited. The ability to fight atrophies. But people have to fight. Otherwise, I fear this will be Rwanda on steroids. This will be a successful ethnic cleansing. I don't think the outcome is guaranteed. It depends upon the resistance of people across the Middle East. And we are so inspired by the Yemenis, who are enforcing international law to protect people in danger of genocide. And for their pains, they're being bombed by the British and the Americans. This is so clear. You know, Ronald Reagan used the phrase the empire of evil to talk about America's enemies. But millions and millions of people around the globe now realize what the empire of evil is. And its capitals are Washington, London, and Brussels.
Correct. Speaking of inspiration, that is shared by millions of people, hundreds of millions of people around the world, and no less the people here in the UK. Weekend protests for months now. There's another national one taking place this weekend. And as we heard the activists say earlier, that they're not going to stop unless and until the British government changes its position. How do you see that? I haven't lived here for a long time, but I think this level of commitment is really unprecedented.
Absolutely. I think that we've not seen this level of commitment before. I've been organizing protests for a long time now, and even I'm shocked seeing that the turnout isn't dwindling. And it's amazing to see that people are willing to come out weekend after weekend after weekend to fight for what they believe is right, for human rights. Yeah. And we are seeing more and more that our government, be it a democracy, doesn't seem to reflect what the people want. And more people are getting frustrated and are willing to come out. So this is something that will escalate. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something that will quieten down with our government's silence. I think that the more silent they are and the more complicit the UK becomes, the more the people will stand up. So when you are going to protest, I would say to any viewers listening that you are having a direct impact. Mm-hmm. You may feel as though it's something that you're just going to be doing every weekend, you know, and it doesn't really make a difference whether or not you show up yourself, but it does. It makes a massive difference.
Exactly. It's that knowledge that keeps galvanizing people to turn out weekend after weekend. Final question to Mick. And briefly, if you may, Mick, Palestine is now a political issue, and with the ceasefire vote looming in the British Parliament, talk about the significance of this vote and the message the outcome of it will send.
It's very difficult to tell because we have a pro-genocide government and a pro-genocide opposition. I think, you know, come the next election, we'll be able to vote UK-wide for two parties, each of which supports the Israeli genocide. That's clear. I don't think demonstrating as we do every week and as we will do in Glasgow tomorrow in a Scottish demonstration is enough. We defeated the American militarists in Vietnam because they began to be afraid of a mass movement getting out of control. In Glasgow last week, this week, we saw an arms company shut down for a day. We've seen students occupy buildings. We need to go beyond an electoral focus in order to create the conditions where the government realises it will be more dangerous to continue supporting genocide than to retreat.
Okay, and that does it for this episode. Fatima Merchant and Mick Napier, thank you for your time, and thank you. Join us again next time for more. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll discuss some of the contents of chapter Naml, the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, as well as some of the commentary points of the verses. Dear listeners, let's listen to the first to third verses of the chapter.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
طاسين. تلك آيات القرآن وكتاب مبين.
Seen. These are the verses of the Quran and a clear book. As guidance and good tidings for the believers. Who establish prayer and give zakah. And of the hereafter, they are certain in faith.
So as we said, we are going to discuss the contents of this surah. Now, before we begin and get into discussion about the contents of this chapter, let us have a look at the general contents of this verse, as well as the holy chapter. So,
At first, we need to know that this is the 27th chapter of the Holy Quran, which was revealed at Mecca. It has 93 verses, which we will discuss in 7 sections. Now, the surah, which is named Naml due to the 18th verse, which is about ants and Solomon, ala nabiyyina wa alihi wa alayhi salam, it is called Naml, which means the ant. But it is also called the chapter of Sulaiman and also Taasin. Now, the whole verses of this surah were revealed in connection with different events and occasions, and the holy phrase Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim has been repeated twice in this chapter. One of them is at the beginning of this surah, and the other is in number 30, at the onset of Solomon's letter to Sheba, the queen, which we will thoroughly discuss. The struggles of other prophets like Prophet Moses, Solomon, Salih, and Lut against different tribes of their times have been referred to in this surah, and most detailed of them is that of Solomon, which resulted to Sheba's faith in monotheism. Of course, another portion of the verses of this holy surah is about Solomon speaking with the birds, such as hoopoe and some insects like ants, and also the attendance of some of the jinns in the army and court of Solomon. And finally, bringing the throne of Sheba from Yemen to Syria in a short moment. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
Dear listeners, before we begin, let us have a look at some of the traditions regarding this surah. A tradition stated by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam announces that whoever recites the triple surahs, which begin with Taasin, which means Surah Shu'ara, Naml, and Qasas, in the night before Friday, he will be one of the friends of Allah, and he will be nigh to him, and he will be involved in his grace and support. Of course, this is on condition that if he fulfills his religious duties sincerely, and not just recite the verses with his tongue, but also contemplate on the contents of the verses. So we ask the Almighty Allah to help us throughout these commentary programs to give us insight into the meanings and contents of this chapter. Now, the beginning verse starts saying Taasin, tilka ayatul Quran wa kitabin mubin. The word mubin is derived from the word ibana, which means to make clear and also clear. So this word is both transitive and intransitive. And one of the ways of treatment of Allah, one of his customs, is that he lets revelation